The following is an encore presentation from February 13th, 2004.
On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
We're delighted to welcome to On the Bookshelf Dr. Gary Chapman, the author of The Five Love Languages for Singles. He's the best-selling author of The Five Love Languages, and the book, this new book, is from Northfield Publishing.
Five Love Languages, this is something that you didn't just come up with for this book. This is a concept that you came up with for the original The Five Love Languages. You have found a way to be able to use these same concepts, not only for married couples, but also for relationship between parents and their children, and now for singles to relate to one another. And I think that's really interesting because it shows the universality of the things that drive us.
Well, I think that's true, Dave. You know, years ago, I went through about 20 years of my own counseling notes I had made when I was counseling people, and asked myself, when people said to me, I feel like my spouse doesn't love me, or a child says, I feel like my parents don't love me, what did they want? You know, I had it in my counseling notes, and I wrote those things down, and when I put them in categories, they fell into what I now call the five love languages. Five ways to express love emotionally to another person. And each person has a primary love language. And if you really want to be successful in relationships, you have to learn how to speak the other person's primary love language.
Those five primary love languages are words of affirmation, gifts, acts of service, quality time, and physical touch. Now, you point out in this book and also in your original that people are more complicated than just A through E, that you have a primary love language, but we also have other love languages that are our secondary languages, or we have dialects of this language.
Yes, I think it's very similar to the spoken language, Dave. You know, I grew up speaking English, Southern style, okay? You can tell that, right? And other people grew up speaking English with a different dialect. But we understand each other because we speak the same basic language. Well, the same thing is true in love languages. Everybody has a primary love language, and then within the language, there are dialects. For example, let's take acts of service. There are lots of dialects in speaking acts of service. One of them, for example, for my wife, is washing dishes. You know, if I wash dishes, it speaks loudly to her. If I vacuum floors, it speaks loudly to her. So, you know, you have to find out whether it's a marriage relationship or whether it's single adults trying to relate to their circle of friends, what really makes the other person feel loved or appreciated. And you learn not only the primary language, but you have to learn the various dialects that they really appreciate.
Well, let's talk about, even though this is not in the order, let's talk about the acts of service, one of the five love languages. If you are not sure what your love language is, and you're not sure if you're having trouble relating to someone else, there is an easy test to figure out what's your primary love language. What would you like? What do you offer to other people? What's the first thing you think of when you want to show your love for somebody else?
That's right. If you want to know your own love language, what makes you really feel loved, you ask yourself, how do I typically express love to other people? Because usually we speak our own love language. If acts of service makes me feel loved, then that's what I do for other people. If words is my love language, I tend to give people positive words. Now, that's not true altogether. I say about 75% of the time that's the case. For example, there are guys who grew up in homes where their father told them, son, whatever you do, always get the woman gifts. You know, get her gifts. Don't miss a holiday. Get her gifts. You know, so the guy gets gifts. It's not because he wants to receive gifts. It's because he learned to speak that love language from his father. So, you know, there are exceptions to the rule. But about 75% of the time, what we do for others is what we really would like to have for ourselves.
Now, there also are some of those people who have either learned how to do this, or they're just such loving people that practically any of the five love languages will work on some level with them.
Well, I think that's true. You know, in a real sense, all five of these love languages can be appreciated by anyone. I mean, you know, who wouldn't like to have words of affirmation or a gift or act of service or quality time or physical touch? You know, all of those things can speak love to all of us. But the key is that we do have a primary language, and if you don't speak the primary love language, the other person will not necessarily feel loved. And so that's the key. You know, one of the things, Dave, that stimulated me to write this particular book for singles,
mm-hmm.
is I got a letter from a single gal who was living in Japan, and she said to me, Dr. Chapman, I know you wrote your original book for married couples, trying to help them learn how to love each other, but I read that book, and for the first time in my life, I understood my mother. She said, for example, when I was growing up, my mother was very dominating. I saw her as very controlling of my life. She said, when I went off to college, for example, my mother would show up about every 6 weeks and actually clean my room. She said, I hated it, you know. And she said, when I got out of college and I got on my own, if mother knew that I was having someone over, you know, or a group over for dinner or whatever, she would bake cookies and bring them over to me and give them to me. And she said, I just thought, Mama, stay out of my life. She said, as a matter of fact, the reason I came to Japan, she said, I wanted to help people, and I've come here to teach English as a second language. But she said, the real reason I came was to get away from my mother.
Oh, goodness. She
said, when I read your book, for the first time in my life, I finally understood my mother was loving me.
Yeah.
She was speaking acts of service, which was her love language. It wasn't my love language. She said, my love language was words, and I never got any positive words from my mother. She said, I guess maybe because I was so negative toward her, she didn't say very many positive things toward me. So she said, I wrote my mother and told her I'd read this wonderful book, and I wanted her to read it. And said, my mother read the book, and she said, we both apologized to each other that we had misunderstood each other's actions through the years. And she said, now when my mother sends me emails, she gives me lots of positive words, and I really feel loved by my mother. And I told her, when I get home, I'm going to paint your bedroom for you. So, you know, I realize that single adults have many significant relationships with parents, with siblings, with roommates, with dating partners, you know. And I'm just trying in this book to help singles learn how to effectively communicate to each other on an emotional level.
And joining us, we're talking to Dr. Gary Chapman, who is the best-selling author of The Five Love Languages, and his new book is The Five Love Languages for Singles. It's from Northfield Publishing. One of the five primary love languages is physical touch. If your love language is physical touch and you're a single person, there are parameters, and there are places that you go and there are places that you stop, and I thought you handled that real well in the book.
Well, I think when you're talking to single adults and you're coming at life from a Christian perspective, then you have to deal with this. You know, the fact is, in all cultures, there are appropriate touches across sexual lines and there are inappropriate touches across sexual lines. And, of course, the scriptures lay down some rather clear guidelines also, particularly in terms of sexual intercourse outside the marriage relationship. And one of the points I like to make is that physical touch is not to be equated with sex.
Right.
Many times people make that mistake. But physical touch means that you are reaching out to touch people physically in an affirming way. It can be a hug. It can be a pat on the back. It can be a kiss on the cheek. It can be, you know, any number of things so long as they are appropriate. Now, we all know that they're inappropriate touches in terms of abuse. You know, physical abuse is the opposite of what we're talking about because we're talking about affirming touches. So I think for single adults, if it's a dating relationship in particular, the couple has to work out their own guidelines in terms of physical touch. But if physical touch is one's primary love language, you don't want to draw back from touching each other because you're drawing back from loving them when you do that. But you do have to set parameters.
I think this is one of the things that fathers struggle with when they have daughters who have become teenagers. And when their daughter was 7 or 8, they didn't have a problem at all with kissing their daughter on the cheek or letting her sit on his lap or giving him a big hug or anything like that. But then at some point when the daughter becomes more of a woman, a lot of fathers aren't really exactly sure how to relate to them. And if the daughter's primary love language is physical touch, which would be hugging or a fatherly kiss on the cheek or something like that, then they're going to feel starved. And in your term that you use, their love tank is going to get very empty.
That's very true, and that's something many fathers don't understand because they do draw back from their daughters often from hugging them or kissing them and that sort of thing. And what happens is, if that's her primary love language in particular, then her love tank gets empty and she really feels like her father doesn't love her. And what happens is she turns to older teenage boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they're ready to step in, you know, and give her physical touch. And consequently, she feels loved by them, and often she falls in love with them and ends up making very, very poor decisions with her life. So, you know, to fathers, and there are a lot of single fathers out there, I like to say to them, you know, whatever your teenage daughter's primary love language is, you want to continue to speak that language throughout the teenage years. And if it's physical touch, you want to keep touching her, obviously in appropriate ways, but you want to keep communicating to her, I love you, in a language that she understands.
I also would say that for siblings, that this can be sort of an interesting thing. And what, again, your love language is not automatically everybody else's. There are two brothers, say, and one of them likes to give his brother a good manly hug or pat him on the back or you know, a little playful punch on the arm or something like that. And the other brother doesn't like that at all. He responds well to words of affirmation. He'd love to hear his older brother say, hey, you know, I'm really proud you're my little brother. I really think we make a great team. And he doesn't get that. Instead, he gets a good-natured chunk on the arm or something. He's not going to feel loved at all. And there's going to be a friction between the two of them that your book could help them to realize they're just misreading each other's love languages.
I think that many single adults who do not have very good relationships with siblings, we're talking about adults now, young singles, don't have very good relationships. These relationships with siblings could be greatly enhanced if they would learn how to speak the primary love language of that sibling. And in the book, of course, I give a lot of illustrations of that because, you know, we all desperately need to feel loved. I mean, it's our deepest emotional need. And it doesn't matter whether you're talking about you're being loved by your brother or being loved by your parents or being loved by someone you're dating or being feeling appreciated by a co-worker. You know, we want to be appreciated in the workplace. But the question is, how do you communicate that so that the other person genuinely feels appreciated or genuinely feels loved? And my hope is, Dave, that this book is going to help a lot of singles learn how to really connect emotionally with the significant people in their lives.
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Dr. Gary Chapman, who's the author of The Five Love Languages for Singles, as well as the original Five Love Languages. The Five Love Languages for Singles is from Northfield Publishing. This just made me think of something from your book, and from I have two sons that are in college, and let's say that you're roommates, and you want to be like that mom. You want to say, hey, I appreciate my roommate. He's a good guy. He pays his rent on time. He hadn't gotten the phone cut off. So I'm going to clean up the house. And let's say that the roommate whose house is being cleaned doesn't really like people in his stuff. He has his things in a particular place or something. And when he sees his roommate cleaning up, he may think, well, what, that guy doesn't think I can keep my place nice? Once again, it's a miscommunication.
He may take it absolutely in a different way. You're doing it as an expression of love. He takes it as you're controlling my life.
Yeah.
So what we have to do in college roommate situations, and all of us know that college roommates often don't get along very well, you know. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But what I'm saying is you can create a different atmosphere between you and your college roommate by learning their primary love language and speaking it. So if their love language is words of affirmation, then you begin to look for the positive things that you see in them, and you begin to verbally affirm them, and their attitude toward you changes. I mean, they begin to think of you as a friend because you're speaking their love language. It's amazing, Dave, the difference it makes between two people when they start speaking each other's love language. It really changes the emotional climate between the two of them.
In reading your book, your original book, and then reading the ones since then, and the newest one, it just amazes me that it's so easy for us to misread each other.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just the fact that by nature, we assume that whatever makes me feel loved and appreciated will make other people feel loved and appreciated.
Yeah.
So we do what to us is a very normal and natural thing. And if words is our language, then we give people verbal affirmation. We tell them how much we appreciate what they do and how nice they look, and we give them all these verbal affirmations. But if that's not their love language, it doesn't mean to them what it would mean to you. So you have to find out what is their language, speak that language, and then they feel loved. It's a thing of, you know, we're supposed to love others as we would like for them to love us. Okay, that's the biblical perspective. But the mistake people make is in assuming that what makes me feel loved will make them feel loved. And this book is trying to help you learn how to speak the other person's language, not your own language.
Let's talk about one of the love languages is quality time. You mentioned that kind of in passing a couple of minutes ago. And I know one of the complaints that I've heard about siblings is that even if they're roommates or even if they're living in the same town, they don't really spend enough quality time together. My youngest brother came to the university here in town where I graduated school, and I figured, well, you know, it'll really be nice having him in town, and we'll get to see each other a lot. But we had to go out of our way to schedule time to meet.
I think, Dave, you know, again, almost all of these love languages require some effort and some time. Obviously, quality time requires time, you know. And so we have to, all of these things are intentional. You have to decide, you know, if that's their love language, then I've got to find a way to do that because I want them to feel loved. So you invite them over for dinner, and to them, that's very, very meaningful. You had them over, you spent the whole evening with them, and there are other people that you're inviting them over to dinner and spending the evening with them. It would be, they would feel it was an imposition. You know, I don't want to go over there and spend all the evening with them, you know. But if it's their love language, then they want to be there, and they find that a deep expression of love. So human relationships are not as easy as simply doing what comes natural. Most people are sincere. In fact, you know, most parents are sincere. A lot of single parents out there, they love their children. They're doing everything they can to help their children grow up in a normal way because they realize the child has gone through a divorce or whatever. And so they're doing everything they can to love, and yet the child says, I don't feel loved. And so what I'm saying to single parents is there is a more effective way, and that involves learning the primary love language of each child and speaking that language. When you do that, that child will feel loved.
You have a really good example in the chapter on gifts. I thought it was really interesting how people can misread each other. It was a young man and young woman who were dating. The young lady is in college, and she has a whole room full of teddy bears, and this bothers him. Tell us the story.
Well, he saw that he was dating this gal, and he found out she had this whole room full of teddy bears, and she knew the name of all the teddy bears, and she slept with the teddy bears. And he said to me, I don't understand it. He said, you know, if she were 5 or 6 years old, I could understand this, but, you know, she's 23, sleeping with teddy bears. He said, I don't understand this, you know. And so in the course of conversation and talking and so forth, I discovered that her love language was gifts. And one of the things that triggered that for me was that she had named all the teddy bears, and she knew who gave her all the teddy bears. You know, this one came from Dad, this one came from Mother, this was my sister, my brother. And so it was obvious to me that her primary love language was gifts. Well, he didn't understand that at all. He'd never even thought about that. And I said to him, every one of these is a gift of love to her. He said, well, wait a minute, though. Wait a minute. He said, two of them were given to her by former boyfriends. He said, I don't like that, you know. I said, well, maybe those two need to go, but the rest of them need to stay because they're expressions of love to her. And I said, incidentally, if you want to enhance this relationship, you better buy her a teddy bear.
Yeah.
I said, you don't have to give her one every year. Just give her one teddy bear, but you better give her gifts because that's her love language. And if you want her to feel loved by you, then you're going to have to speak her language.
It's so easy, once again, for people to miscommunicate with each other because they're just not, they're making the assumption, again, that everybody's love language is the same, and yes, that everybody's love language is the same as theirs. And this leads to hurt feelings or broken relationships. The fact that this young lady had two boyfriends, and it seems to me in the chapter that you went into some discussion with her about to find out what was important about the teddy bears, and found out that one of the things that the other boyfriends didn't do well is they didn't understand the whole gift idea.
That's right. That's why she broke up with them.
Yeah.
See, a lot of times, here's what happens in a dating relationship. You know, we get the tingles for the other person, and we start going out with them, okay? And then we get obsessed with them. We typically call that we fall in love, okay? We're obsessed with each other. And in that stage, it's not an effort. I mean, whatever you've ever done or thought about loving, you do it when you're in love. I mean, you probably speak all five languages when you're in love. And consequently, you both feel loved. It's a super, super high. But the average lifespan of that high is 2 years. Some longer, some less, average 2 years. You come down off the high, okay? And that's when dating couples typically begin to think, you know, wait a minute, I've lost it. I don't feel what I used to feel. And consequently, many of them break up. And sometimes those relationships would have been wonderful marriage relationships, but because they lost the feeling, they broke up. So what I'm saying is this. If you, while you're dating, learn the primary love language of the other person, you speak each other's primary love language, when you come down off the high, assuming you date 2 years, you come down off the high, you're still speaking each other's language, you still feel loved, you don't have the euphoria, no, that's temporary anyway, but you still feel loved. Now you can make a wise decision about whether to continue this relationship or not. Because you do have feelings, now you can look at the other aspects of the relationship and decide, should we get married or should we not get married? So this really does have a lot of implications for those singles who are in dating relationships.
It actually also affects the couples, I would say, who dated for a very short time and then they got married. And it seems to me that what often happens in those situations is they never got over the euphoria before they got married. And so they still had kind of that kind of floating on air feeling for a while. And then inevitably, things kind of even out a little bit. And if they're not careful, they quit communicating or they never really learned how to communicate love languages.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden they can't figure out why this person who was so crazy for them a few months ago just treats them like somebody ordinary now. They fight and they feel hurt and they both feel rejected. And if they don't get the right kind of counseling or the right kind of wisdom, or they don't read a book like this one, then they're going to just say, well, you know, I guess we fell out of love, so we might as well just get divorced and we'll try again with somebody else.
Yeah, David, that's what happens all the time. I mean, I see this over and over and over again. This is a very, very common phenomenon. And it's because people don't understand the nature of love. Who's ever had a class on love? You know, they don't teach that in the university. And they don't teach it in high school. They don't understand love. So I think one of the things that I'm trying to do in this book is to say, you know, there's two stages of romantic love. One is the euphoria, you know, in which you're in love. And the other is far more intentional. I call it covenant love because it's a choice you make to communicate love. And you have to learn how to do it. And that's what this book is all about. It's teaching you how to move from stage one to stage two. And if you don't move to stage two, then the relationship will deteriorate. Whether you're single or and unmarried or whether you're already married, the relationship will go downhill because you're not meeting each other's emotional need for love. And if you can learn that in a young marriage, when you come off the high, what happens typically is all of your differences emerge and you end up arguing about things that you never dreamed about arguing about before. And so you don't have love feelings. And now you see all the differences, and you argue with the person that you used to love. And consequently, many times, people split and start all over again. And the same thing's going to happen in the next marriage. So what I'm saying is, let's learn how love works. Two stages, learn how to make the transition from the in-love experience to the more intentional love, and then you can build positive, lifelong relationships.
I think that's one of the things that is so interesting about your books. It's the kind of wisdom that you can really carry with you. If people understood these five love languages and really sought to be intentional about understanding them, that there would be a lot fewer brokenhearted people wandering around.
Well, Dave, I know that's true because I get so many reports from people who say to me, you know, we were this close to divorce and somebody gave us your book. That's the original book, The Five Love Languages. Somebody gave us your book and it opened up our minds and we realized what had happened in our marriage and it literally turned us around. So, you know, I know that can happen with married couples, and now this new book, The Five Love Languages for Singles, I know this can help single adults in all of their relationships. Single adults need to feel loved and they need to know how to give love. And that's to their parents, that's to their siblings, that's to their roommates, that's to co-workers in the office, that's the dating partners. In all relationships, single adults need to learn how to communicate love effectively. And that's what this book is all about, helping you identify your own love language, helping you identify the love language of the significant people in your life, and learn how to have what you want to have, which is good relationships.
There's a section in the back of the book, the five love languages profile, so that you can, or you can even go online for a study guide at www.fivelovelanguages.com. So this is not the kind of book where you just say, well, here, give them the book and do the best you can. You give them study guides, you give them this profile so they can try to figure out their own love languages. So as they're reading the book, they can start to connect with this emotionally and spiritually as well.
You know, one single gal told me the other day, she said, Dr. Chapman, that profile in the back is super. She said, it was worth the price of the book just to get the profile. She said, I'd heard about the five love languages, but I didn't really know what mine was. And, of course, that profile gives you couplets, two statements. You know, I feel love when someone pats me on the back. I feel love when someone gives me a word of affirmation. But you can only have one. You have to make a choice between the two. So you make 30 choices, and it tells you what your love language is. And then the study guide, which you mentioned, which you can download from the website, can be used with groups if you want to discuss this in groups in the church or other groups of singles. Or it can be used just as an individual, you know, just questions to help you think your way through the content of the book. So we're trying to help singles get this idea into the fabric of their lives so that all of their relationships are improved. So I think any group of singles, I wrote it primarily with single adults in mind, you know, 18 mm-hmm. and up. But certainly older teenagers would understand right. the concept and certainly could apply it as well.
Dr. Gary Chapman, the author of The Five Love Languages for Singles from Northfield Publishing, also the author of, there's a whole series here, starting with the five love languages, and including the love languages of God, the other side of love, the five love languages of children, the five love languages of teenagers, and Toward a Growing Marriage, and the five love languages men's edition, available from Northfield Press. And check out his website again at fivelovelanguages.com. Dr. Gary Chapman, I've enjoyed your books for a long time, gotten a lot of insight from them, and I'm sure I'm delighted I had a chance to visit with you a little bit today on the bookshelf.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's good to be with you, and keep up the good work.
Thanks. You too. God bless.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us on the bookshelf across our network. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on your favorite radio station at this time. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. God bless.